Hello and welcome to GCSE English Revision Pod. How are you getting on in lockdown, Mr. Forster?
Yeah, bad actually. It's sunshine outside. Doing a bit of teaching over the interwebs.
It's been teaching over the interwebs, yeah.
Unlike other teachers, like we've been doing this for years. Doing podcasts.
Well, exactly. You know, this is our bread and butter.
If anything, I'm a voice for radio. A face for radio, even. Messed that allude. Never mind. We'll overlook that joke.
We will. And instead, we will get into the topic of today's podcast. But not before we say, if you are listening for the first time, it is a very, very good idea to download the accompanying handout before you start listening. This can be found in the description of this podcast. So go there now, click on that link, and you will have a handout to follow us along with. You will have all the key analysis we do. You will have the contextual factors we talk about, and you will have some brilliant key vocabulary to support your arguments as well.
I thought for a second there, you say, if you're listening for the first time, it's a really good idea. I just thought you're going to stop and just be like...
Just be really well done. If you're listening for the first time...
well done you. Good idea.
Yeah. I should have had a go at them for being so late to the party, yeah. Perhaps.
Yeah, it's a good idea now.
Yeah, if you're listening for the first time, then what's wrong with you?
Sort yourself out.
But anyway, let's
quite an aggressive start to the podcast. We're not normally like that if you are listening for the first time, just to be.
No, it's normally a much nicer affair. But today is a character who does invoke a bit of anger, I suppose. So maybe we're just we're preempting the emotion that might be brought up the more we talk about this character, yes?
Well, yeah. I mean, I thought this is our ninth episode now on Inspector Calls, and what we're hoping to do is obviously that we can't possibly in our podcast cover every possible question that could be asked. But what we've tried to do is give you a range of different approaches to how to structure an essay on a range of different questions. So we've covered Sheila, class divisions, the inspector, Eva Smith, responsibility, gender, Gerald, and we've also looked at pride. So I thought actually the big one that's missing that we haven't looked at yet is a character question on Eric.
Right, so you have put together an essay on the way Priestley uses Eric to teach us things. Remember, that's always the key, isn't it, that when you're asked about a character, the essay is not asking you, do you like this character, or list the things this character does in the play. The essay is asking you, what does the author use this character for? What is the purpose of this character in the narrative? What do they teach us? And what do you think Eric does teach us?
Yeah, well, if we're going for personal reactions, I think Eric's given far too easy a time. I think he's an absolute beep. But I mean, because I think what I've left him till last, because I think in many ways an essay on Eric is probably one of the most difficult essays writing about an Inspector Calls, because he's a character who's presented in such ambivalent terms. So yeah. It's on our handout. It's one of our key words, but it's the idea of like having mixed feelings towards something or someone. I think that's because on the one hand, Eric is quite we want to like him. He is like Sheila. He changes. He has a moral and social epiphany. He recognizes the role of the inspector. He criticizes his parents, but he's also a rapist. So there's this horrible ambivalence we'll come on to what our thesis is in a moment, but I think there's definitely something problematic about the portrayal of Eric, particularly in the wake of the Me Too movement, particularly, you know, reading him now, in 2020, I think there's something quite disturbing about it. And lots of productions that I've seen of an Inspector Calls actually play down that quite sinister, almost predator-like side of his character, because it makes it, of course, very difficult to sympathise with him for modern audiences.
It goes against, and if you start viewing him in that way, it then sort of goes against Priestley's intended message, doesn't it? Because I think he is meant to be part of the... he is meant to be part of you, what helps you to learn how you should react and that kind of thing. But yeah, if you see him purely through the lens of what he's done, it sort of goes against Priestley's message, which I think, as you say, is more the way a modern audience would see it rather than a 1940s audience.
Yeah. And I think the one thing to be aware of there is that's the kind of thing that's actually perfectly valid to say in your conclusion. but just don't start your essay with it, because actually a conclusion is where I say this is really where your personal reflections, your reaction from your gut, your visceral reaction to the play should really be kind of put down on paper. And I think it's perfectly appropriate to say in a conclusion on an essay on Eric just how problematic he is to an audience in the wake of, you know, to a modern audience watching the play
today. Okay. Well, shall we get into your thesis then?
So the question is, just to be clear, how does Preecy present the character of Eric in Spectacle? So quite a simple run-of-the-mill question, the kind that you could get on a character. So it says this. In J.B. Preecy's 1945 play and in Spectacles, the character of Eric, Mr. Burling's son, is presented in ambivalent terms. At the beginning of the play, he is irresponsible and impetuous, and we even learn of his potentially criminal actions, stealing from his father and raping Eva Smith. However, by Act 3, he undergoes a moral and social epiphany. He therefore becomes a symbol of how not only are the young willing to change, but also how no matter what an individual has done, there is still the possibility for redemption.
Right, so the interesting thing that you're drawing on is exactly what you've just said, that actually he's one of the most difficult characters to work out how you feel about. And to be honest, to write a really interesting essay, you don't have to be completely sure how you feel about a character. Well, you can simply explore the different interpretations of them.
Well, and the best essays do that, because if we think about the etymological root of the word essay itself, essay is from the French to try. So the best essays try out ideas. They put an idea on trial. They work out how far it works, how far it doesn't. So that's what we're going to do in this essay. We're going to try out some different ideas about Eric until we reach what we do think in the conclusion.
Yeah, fantastic. All right, let's go for it then.
So the first section, we've got three sections to this essay. The first one, we're going to look at what he's like at the beginning. The second, we're going to look at how that low point of his life, when the inspector questions him. At the end, we're going to talk about his moral and social epiphany. So in many ways, this is a kind of structure you can do for many character essays in Inspector Calls. Because of the structure of the play, actually writing about many characters, you can do it in a very similar way. So let's look at the beginning first of all. Priestley's depiction of Eric in Act 1 certainly emphasises his immaturity. He's truculent and morose and seems reluctant to conform to the expectations his family place on him.
Brilliant. Do you want to shore up truculent and morose?
So truculent is a wonderful word. I often use it to describe students. It's like being ready to fight, like looking for a fight. So we've all taught truculent students, the ones that sit there till you look at them and they say, "Why are you looking at me, sir?" And you say, "Hello, David," or whoever his name is. Morose is kind of ill-tempered and moody. So what we've kind of got here is that Eric at the start, he's actually quite childish, isn't he? He's looking for a fight with his parents and his sister. He's ill-tempered, he's bickering, and he just doesn't want to conform to what his father wants for him. So he certainly isn't some kind of aspirational figure of social change at the beginning, is he? He's childish.
Certainly not.
And a bit kind of, yeah, naughty.
Dislikable.
Yeah, because his first exchanges in the play, they're marked by this kind of immature bickering with his sister. So he suddenly guffaws. Could you do a guffaw for me, please, Mr. Galley? Very good. Sheila's talking and he's just like, you know, and Sheila says he's squiffy, which is Edwardian slang for drunk. And when Sheila kisses Gerald, he shouts dramatically, "Study the buffs," which is like an idiom, slang idiom from the Edwardian period, referring to the 2nd Buffs Regiment, if you're interested. But the point in here is that there's nothing serious about him. He's mocking those around him. He's looking for fights with his sister, and he's drunk. And there's lots of moments of prolepsis here. So prolepsis is on your sheet. It's a really good word. It's foreshadowing, things that set up something that's going to happen later. And the crucial moments of prolepsis in this scene are his drinking problem. He's called Squiffy by his sister. He takes the decanter and helps himself. That becomes this motif in the play of him drinking. In Act 3, when being questioned by the inspector, he says, "Could he have a drink first?" He goes for the whiskey. All of this, the alcohol has become this coping mechanism for Eric. So in many ways, he's the epitome of this upper middle class entitlement. This childish, he's a man child, isn't he? He's a bit like, Mr. Galley.
Well, I don't think that's very fair in any way, really. But
nothing like
he's, that. I think if we all think back to our teenage years, we certainly, most people would recall times where they behaved, especially around sort of family events. There's that time when you think you're a bit too cool for it all or whatever, or that your family are are the last people you want to be hanging out with. And I think that it's quite universal in that sense, isn't it? The presentation of Eric is he almost thinks he's sort of he didn't need to be there, really. He doesn't understand why he's got to be amongst this boring family affair when he'd much rather be out on the town, really, wouldn't he?
Yeah, and I think it makes us all reflect back on our younger selves and think, God, you were horrible, weren't you?
Yeah, I get you. Do you get that as a teacher? I sometimes have horrible flashbacks to, you remember you were really nice at school, weren't you? I sometimes get flashbacks to like my behavior when I was in a lesson, and I feel so guilty about it now, especially now I've been on the other end of it. And
I
just want to find those teachers and say sorry. I want to write them a letter and apologize for being awful. But I think Eric is, you know,
Eric is,
he's a petulant child, isn't he, in a man's body.
Yeah, interestingly, his father encapsulates this idea of it, his laissez-faire attitude towards life. That's a great, it's on your sheet, but it's an attitude of just like letting things happen, not trying, just sitting back and letting things happen around you. Because Mr. Burling says that he's had to face few responsibilities and he's had a public school and varsity life. So interestingly, of all the characters to criticise Eric at the beginning, it's his father, who is himself quite not a particularly impressive figure. But this, I think, in many ways gets across his kind of, you know, selfish, you know, isolated, insular upbringing that he's had. This public school and varsity life. He's gone to some big public school and he's gone straight on to probably one of the top universities.
I see. It's funny, isn't it? Because he paid for all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And that was the life he designed for him. But now he's kind of like, you boy, you've not, you know, you haven't had the life I've had.
Yeah.
And you're not, you're no good. But yeah, sorry, we carry on. Carry on with this first paragraph.
I think the ambivalence we've got to look at in this paragraph then is that even in this kind of childish, truculent, morose attitude that we see in Act One, there's moments of real empathy. When the inspector says that the disinfectant burnt Eva inside out, of course, it's only Eric that responds of Mr. Burling Gerald and Eric. And he shouts out, my God. So interestingly, even from before his engagement with the inspector, he shows some kind of genuine emotional reaction to what's happened to Eva Smith. He's also the one that points out that it's not a free country for Eva Smith if you can't go and work somewhere else. And he recognises...
Ironically, the life that Mr. Burling is saying has not taught him anything. He's sort of saying, oh, you know, you've been to public school, you've had everything given to you on a plate, you don't know anything about real life. But ironically, right from the start, Eric shows a deeper understanding of what his life is like for people like Eva.
There's a sense of him, of perhaps an awareness here that foreshadows his later change, of there's something being fundamentally wrong with how he is.
Yeah.
So that brings us to paragraph two. And there's a really useful word here that I wanted to introduce on the vocabulary list. I was trying to looking at a way to shoehorn this in because it's one of my favourite words. And it's a nadir, which is the lowest point. So a zenith is the highest point of something. The nadir is the lowest point. It's a really useful word for literary analysis. I think because you could say it is, however, only under the questioning of the inspector that the nadir of his life is revealed as the audience learns.
I sometimes think about the period when I had to work with you as my boss as something of a nadir. Do you think that's a good use of that piece of vocabulary?
Many people have reflected that same reflection, Mr. Gully.
Yeah, the sort of dead-eyed feeling. All right. Yeah, sorry. Paragraph two, then.
So it is, however, only under the questioning of the inspector that the nadir of his life is revealed as the audience learns of his treatment of Eva Smith. So so what we learn here, you know, he's petulant and selfish. So even in Act Three, when his mother is ashamed of him, he says, you haven't made it any easier for me, have you? And when Sheila tells Mrs. Burling about his drinking, he calls her a little sneak. So even though he does change and seems to empathise with Eva Smith, in Act Three, he's still... quite petulant and defensive. And when he talks of the rape, he says that he was in that state when a chap easily turns nasty and I threatened to make a row. I mean, it's so troubling. This is the moment when he's talking about when he first had sex with Eva Smith, that he turned nasty. And then the inspector defines this later on in his final speech. He says, you used her for the end of a stupid drunken night as if she were an animal, a thing, not a person. I think this is a really good summation of what he's done.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I think you're right to flag this up as one of the most difficult things to understand in the play, because even though the inspector says that, the overall depiction by Priestley, I still think Priestley is sort of more focused on the idea that learning is the important thing and changing as a person is the important thing, rather than judgment of Eric. Do you know what I mean? Even though the inspector talks about him in such strong terms, I think the thing that comes across strongest at the end, the thing that Priestley tries to leave the audience with, is that he's learned from his mistakes and he's changed, rather than weren't his mistakes so terrible.
I think this is a really important, interesting thing to say. You could actually say, and you could write it like this in an essay, in a feminist reading of the play, this is something that's so problematic, that Priestley is so caught up in his socialist message that actually he fails perhaps to go far enough in his depiction of Eric and the consequences of the what he does. Because actually, Eric is the only character in the play that does something that's potentially criminal. Mr. Burling does something immoral, but it's not against the law. Mrs. Burling does something that we don't agree with, but it's not against the law. Gerald does something that we don't like and isn't that particularly admirable, but it's not against the law. Whereas Eric steals and he rapes. He's the only actual criminal of the Burlings.
Yeah.
And
that's interesting.
And even when admitting this to the inspector, this is perhaps why I think this is the nadir of his life, he still seeks to shift responsibility. He says to his father, "You're not the kind of father a chap could go to when he's in trouble." There's a sense that, unlike Sheila, who takes immediate and total responsibility for what she's done, Eric, whilst he does change by the end of the play, his initial response to the inspector is one of seeking a way out, not perhaps taking full responsibility for what he's done. So I think the second paragraph is quite a good one, because Eric, therefore, lots of people see Eric and Sheila as being precisely the same, examples of two young people who change, unlike the older generation. But I think there is a crucial difference between Eric and Sheila. Sheila is petulant and silly at the start, but she undergoes an immediate transformation when the inspector reveals what she's done. Eric's transformation is much slower, perhaps because what Eric's done is much worse. That's what I'd argue in this.
Or another way of reading it, perhaps, is that it's the privilege of being a male that leads to him changing much slower. Perhaps because Sheila, even though Sheila has lived a very privileged life in financial terms, it has still suffered the discrimination that women faced at that time. So perhaps because of her slightly deeper understanding of the unfairness of the world, she's quicker to make that transformation. Whereas Eric, not only is he from a financially comfortable situation, he's also a man, which comes of all of the privileges that came with at that time, and therefore maybe he's a little bit more reluctant, a little bit slower to learn the message because of his increased privilege.
Yeah, and I think so. Again, it's a bit like in our last podcast, we were talking about the impact of pride. It's showing the perhaps what Priest is engaging with here is what privilege does to your view of the world, the way in which it controls what you see around you. So let's look at our final paragraph then. Yet by the end of the play, Eric undergoes a moral and social epiphany, becoming a better and more empathetic person, and unlike his parents, taking responsibility for his actions. So he does change by the end. His truculent outbursts at the end of Act 3, they're no longer defined by himself. They're not selfish. They're not solipsistic, is a great word to describe it. They're not obsessed with himself anymore. They're now about what's happened to Eva. So he has, there's this parallel between his truculent outbursts in Act 1 and Act 3, but the nature of those outbursts has changed. He's now saying that to his parents, he's ashamed of them. It's a sense that in that brighter and harder light of the inspector, as that opening stage direction suggests, he's recognised the reality, the artifice of the world in which he's grown up. A great quotation that kind of encapsulates this. He says, "You told us that a man had to make his own way, that we weren't to take any notice of these cranks. Then one of those cranks walked in. I didn't notice you told him that it was every man for himself."
Right, so he's pulling his father up on that point and essentially saying, "Oh, you were so quick to say that there is, you were so quick to say that there's nothing in what these people say, and yet when one of these people was in our house, you didn't put your argument forward." It's almost as if Eric understands that once you shine a light, again coming back to the stage directions, once you shine a light on the world that
it's
they
empty.
Live in. It's empty. You can't defend it. There's no moral justification for living in luxury while the people who work for you struggle to feed themselves.
Yeah, and he's, you know, he recognised also that whether or not the inspector was a real police officer, he was our police inspector, all right. So whoever the chap was, he explains, the fact remains that I did what I did and Mother did what she did and the rest of you did what you did to her. He even goes so far as to say, we all did her in all right.
It's a classic example with Inspector Calls, isn't it? Because there's not the same metaphorical language that you'll find in Dickens or in Shakespeare or in Jekyll and Hyde or whatever else you might be doing. But even in that repetition of the word did or what we did is incredibly powerful there, isn't it? You know, and if you see that on the stage version, that repetition really, really resonates and it seems to go on forever, which is exactly how it's designed.
There's this euphemistic reluctance to actually admit to what he did what you did what we did what she did. There's almost like this sense of shame that I think Priestley does depict quite well here in Eric, that perhaps there is the sense that he's recognised the gravity of what he's done to Eva Smith.
Don't put it and can't quite word it or is reluctant to word it.
Language fails him. But important questions then to consider as we go towards our conclusion is, what's Priestley saying about the possibility of change here? Is he presenting us with a character who has come from this real nadir of his life and recognised the need to change, the to take account of what he's done? Does Priestley go far enough? Because actually in our conclusion, we might want to think about actually how, in a way, Eric is the only one who really escapes justice and who, if the final phone call is a real police inspector now, will actually face the justice of the law courts. It would be scandal for Mr. Burling and Mrs. Burling. It would be scandal for Gerald. But actually, it would potentially be prison for Eric.
Would it, though? Because presumably that would involve his father pressing charges and it would also involve
So
possibly not that. And also back then, of course, the law was not very protective of women. And this is another factor that can be considered, I suppose, when analysing the context around what Eric did, is that as much as it by modern standards, it would be considered rape, and quite rightly so. It's maybe an important thing to include that by the justice of 1940s, it possibly wouldn't have been a criminal matter, if you know what I mean, because of the advancement and because of the law getting much better and much stronger in those areas. So again, it's another contextual factor that students can look at the difference between then and now.
We don't want to go too far off track, but I think just to finish on our conclusion, I think that's where I'd come to the conclusion. What's your reaction personally to Eric? How do you respond to him? Do you think he does present us with kind of a hope that anyone can change? Or do you think that maybe Priestley's depiction is slightly problematic here and actually for audiences in watching this in 2020, it leaves a nasty taste in the mouth to see Eric escaping justice, to see Eric thinking that just by showing some empathy, he can atone for what actually quite terrible actions that he did.
Yeah, cool. Nicely put together, I would say. That is a very layered essay that explores very many different aspects of the way that Priestley presents Eric. And remember, we come back to this time and time and time again. Mr. Forster has not written an essay there where he talks about whether he personally thinks Eric is a good person or not. He has written an essay which explores the way that Priestley uses Eric to show different things. And once you've done that, that's when you can bring in your evaluation, right? That's when you can talk about how effective these things are and what these things actually mean to you. But first, you've got to talk about how Priestley's using the character to make the points that Priestley wants to make.
Brilliant. I think that's us done.
You think we're out? Okay, so please give us a follow on Twitter at GRevisionPod. Email us at Mr. Forster.
EnglishRevisionPod@gmail.com.
EnglishRevisionPod@gmail.com. Give the podcast a like and a follow as well. That helps us get ourselves out there and hopefully help lots and lots of people with their revision and their studying. We hope you are all keeping well and that lockdown is treating you okay, and we will be back hoping to see you again very, very soon on GCSE English Revision Pod.